75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Here we are at the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin of Oklahoma, and in Secaucus, New Jersey, where is Dick and how are you?
I'm fine, Jerry. How are you doing?
I guess...
Spring is here.
Yeah, I guess so. That's what I was going to say. Spring has sprung. And we have lots of things to talk about tonight.
Right.
So I guess we might as well get right into them. Welcome, everybody. We'll get to the George Filer part at the end of the show, as time allows. But we always have a link to all of his sightings.
Right.
And his report, which is one of the better ones, I think.
Yeah, it's very, very comprehensive. And he manages to pick out some of the best each week of what's available out there of current reports. And not only that, he has some very interesting speculative stuff about Mars and ET life in general in the universe, and also stuff about, our NASA programs and what people on the space shuttles and the International Space Station keep seeing.
You mentioned Mars and other worlds. It's a fairly old story, a couple of weeks maybe, week and a half anyway. What's the details on that planet that they found? I've never, it was similar to Earth, is that the deal?
This discovery occurred, not too long ago, and news articles came out about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago, and it is a very important finding because all the planets that we have detected by various means in other star systems have all been gas giants, in other words, like Jupiter and Saturn, whereas this planet is a rocky planet. It is not a gas giant. And it therefore falls into the class of planets that are Earth similar.
But it is larger, right?
Oh, yes, yes. Strangely enough, it's quite interesting. I mean, in our solar system, in terms of the rocky planets, Earth actually is the largest example. There's no planet, like Earth, or Mars or Venus that is larger than the Earth in our solar system. But certainly it's been hypothesized that larger rocky planets could exist. And it really depends, it's a matter of chance. You can have a great big planet, but it gets something else collides with it and breaks it apart. And then smaller ones reform, and perhaps that's what happened in our solar system, and that's the reason we have a number of planets in the inner solar system that are fairly close in diameter to each other.
Now where is this planet?
It's 20 and a half light years away from the sun, and it is orbiting a star that is a third of the size of our sun, and it is in a class called a red dwarf.
So that means that it, at one time it was probably bigger, the sun.
It potentially might have been, yeah. But it's an old red dwarf, which the age of the thing is much older than the sun, but it's a stable star and still has a long life ahead of it. The star is, it's got a name, a catalog name, Galice 581.
If the Earth, this Earth-like planet has large, much larger mass, somebody told me five times, is that right?
Yeah. It's five times the size of the Earth in terms of mass.
Now, that doesn't mean size necessarily.
No, I mean the relationship, you know, the actual diameter of the planet is 12,000 miles, and the Earth's diameter is approximately 8,000 miles. The mass is five times, but, you know, mass and diameter are not directly related. Packing a lot of mass.
So what I'm trying to get at is, does that mean it's a lot of heavy metal on this planet, or heavy rock, or?
Well, the likelihood is that it probably has an iron core, but of course we have no idea at this point in time.
It wouldn't affect the size of beings on that planet, or would it? Would they have huge giants to move?
Gravity would come into play. So if it were actually at some point in its history inhabited, certainly the beings would have to withstand a lot more gravity than you would on Earth, and they would tend to be sort of flattened out.
And then they may be like the tire guy.
Right.
The Michelin man.
Right. Sort
maybe
of squishy.
Even flatter.
Right.
So probably the ETs that we see, or people talk about, at least, we don't necessarily see them, that are human-like, probably didn't come from there.
No. I mean, I quite frankly doubt that this planet ever really supported life or anything other than, up to the level of bacteria, perhaps, but beyond that, probably not. But, you know, we'll never know until we actually visit star systems that have Earth-like planets. Now, there is a mission by NASA to put a space telescope up that would be able to actually image an Earth-like planet out to, a certain distance, and I don't know how many light years out this capability will be, but considerable. But we'd be able to look at other star systems and actually image a planet that looks much like our own and make some determinations by spectrographic means and as to what kind of an atmosphere it has and whether it has water, oxygen, and importantly, for life being there, do we detect gases such as methane, which is a byproduct of life. So, we should be able to do that within the next 15 to 20 years if there's anything out there to be detected.
Okay, let's talk about a couple other things before we get to the sightings. I'll remind you so we don't mess up, Brian Vike. We had a great story, and we need to finish that.
We have some interesting information supplied to us, one of which, involves a sighting, and I'm going to leave that so that we can tail into Brian's conclusion, his report, because it does involve a sighting. But I'm going to cover some other stuff first. And first thing is that we had an announcement again, a couple of weeks ago, from the United Kingdom about the MOD in the UK, which is
Ministry of Defence,
right? Equivalent to our Department of Defence.
Yeah, it says I got an article here in front of me. Says Ministry of Defence plans to open its X files on UFO sightings to the public for the first time. Now, wait a minute, this sounds familiar.
Yeah, well, it should, because last year at about this same time, they made the same announcement, and I'm not going to pin it down that it was in the month of May last year, but it was certainly some time ago, and we covered the story and said, yeah, they're going to release the, quote, X-Files on UFOs.
Yeah, I got confused because then we started talking about France.
Right.
And you kept saying, England, they made this announcement, but...
Right. But they never followed through. And that's the thing. Now that the French came out with their announcement a few months ago, the English decided that they would re-announce this as though the first story never existed.
Well, this story could be just recycled completely, because it says they've not yet decided on a date for the release of the reports.
Absolutely.
Which date back to 1967, but it's hoped to be within weeks.
Right. Well, that's what they said last year.
This is the same article.
Right. And, well, they've been wise enough to be indefinite and say, well, we don't know when we're going to do this, but we wanted to let you know we're going to do it.
Well, I thought the British were leaving Iraq, too, and I don't think they have.
No, yeah, I think it's
all
part of...
They make all kinds of announcements over there, don't they?
All the part of the same problem, promising but never delivering. So I thought that was a little humorous aside there on ufology.
What about the French? Are they delivering anything?
The French opened up their files.
Okay.
They're available on the internet.
Okay.
So yes, they did deliver.
But the Ministry of Defense hasn't.
Hasn't yet.
Now the Queen's over here. We should have taken that up with her. Oh, wait a minute.
Right.
We weren't invited to the thing.
No, the state dinner. No,
no.
We weren't. Let's see if we roll around the calendar next year and we're making the same announcement.
Yeah, let me file this report and we'll compare wording.
Okay, now the speaking of strange tales coming out of governments, there has recently been some stories among the forum groups, and also some independent researchers have put out some press releases about something known as a UFO working group within the U.S. government, presumably either CIA or DIA associated, and you know, all sorts of nefarious implications. Stories from the aviary, which we've certainly covered on our site before, and various and sundry names
so
mentioned.
The aviary's behind this?
Essentially.
Okay.
The people involved in that kind of stuff, some of which still work for the government. And, you know, we sort of figure that a lot of this stuff is disinformation, and this is probably just another piece of disinformation.
Now, Grant Cameron put out a statement on that. It was kind of interesting. You were reading that to me.
Right.
You might want to cover that for the audience, what he thinks. I guess it's basically just what you said.
Yeah. That's Grant's opinion. Now, you know, they won't even let Grant back in the United States. He's up in Canada, right?
You know, he may never be able to come back.
Once you get right.
That's one of the, even if it was a bureaucratic snafu, they never correct these things. Have you noticed?
That's right. Once you're on the blacklist, you stay.
It's too bad.
I don't know what he did to deserve to be on the blacklist. Probably his name was similar to somebody that they suspected of doing nefarious things, and wasn't him at all. But nonetheless, you know, he was going to come to some conventions a couple of years ago, and he found out he couldn't go.
No, in fact, they wouldn't let him out of the L.A. airport. They put him right back on a plane to Canada.
Right. Nonetheless... He's got an excellent website called Presidential UFO, something like that,
yeah,
right?
And we have an interview with him.
Hey, I got it right, Jerry. PresidentialUFO.com. And here's what Grant had to say about the nefarious UFO working group, you know, with all these secret people that we can't even mention their names. Even if we knew them. I have notes from one of the meetings of the, quote, UFO working.
Now, this is Grant saying this.
Right. And I maintain the group was not, quote, the group, or, quote, MJ-12, or, quote, the cabal. It was classified, as you can see in the attachment. Now, I don't have the attachment of this document. Somehow or another, when the mail was forwarded on to people here, the attachment didn't come with it, although I'm sure he probably has this information out on his website, which, as I said, is presidentialufo.com, and you can go out there and read it for yourself. It was classified, as you can see in the attachment, but appears to have been a lower level, quote, aviary type group. In other words, just a group of people that were within the government, some retired, some not, that at some point in time, and this event occurred back in the 1980s, reviewed a bunch of UFO cases, but got nowhere. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? I mean, we can do that ourselves, Jerry. We got plenty of UFO cases out here on our site, and we can review them too. Can we come to any conclusions? I don't think so. And Grant's saying he doesn't think the government's come to any conclusions either.
Now, what are they saying? Or whoever's putting this stuff out, are they saying that they know something and they just haven't released it?
Yeah, it's the same old story that we've covered, you know, about the multiple ET visitations and the government interactions, and you know, it's the old the same old quote aviary stories that we have covered here on our programming.
Okay, so let's don't put much credence in that.
Well, I put a lot of credence in Grant's work.
Yeah, I agree. As far as uncovering something new.
And no, it's definitely not anything new. Not anything at all.
The thing that bothers me about all of these stories is you start tracking them down and you get to the people and lo and behold, they've all died.
Right.
You ever noticed that?
Except the people telling the tale. And, of course, they identify people that know everything, and you're right. Those people are all mysteriously dead, or you can't get in touch with them.
Well, yeah, they never existed.
Right. So, having passed that milestone, we have a report from Ryan Wood. And this is the Woods Brothers out in Las Vegas.
Well, they had the Christ Retrieval Conference there. Ryan's actually in Colorado, and Dr. Bob Wood is in California.
Right. And this comes from Ryan, and it's a very interesting report indicating certainly some government involvement in investigating apparent UFO crashes. And this is what is reported by Ryan. New information has been released from the Air Force Intelligence Agency, part of the U.S. Air Force, through the Freedom of Information Act that further confirms the August 1979 crashes of a pair of weird spheres near Santa Cruz, Bolivia. The documents not only verify what Ryan S. Wood has already revealed in Magic Eyes Only, in other words, he has those crashes in his catalog of crashed UFOs in this
that's a very well-documented book.
But it also provides additional intriguing details and references to, quote, moon dust, the prominent governmental space debris and UFO retrieval program designated to locate, recover, and deliver descended foreign space vehicles back to Wright-Patterson Foreign Technology Division headquarters for analysis and exploitation. According to several eyewitnesses, two balls of fire fell from the sky and softly landed, in other words, did not crash, but landed, in the cities of Santa Cruz and Kotoka on August the 8th, 1979. The story behind these fallen objects is continuously growing with intensity and credibility. The spheres, almost identical in nature, were about 80 centimeters in diameter, or approximately 2 meters in circumference, with a hole in one side and a metal skin covering approximately one half inch in thickness. The spheres weighed about 6 kilograms with a half inch thick skin, and the outside metal was similar to copper with dark and light spots. The plants near the objects were burned. First-hand witnesses mentioned the official documentation of this incident include Colonel Ariel Coca Campesino, and I don't know what that term stands for, Gonzalo Monacho Viveras, and Nathaniel Mendez Hurtado. Most of the mystery associated with these incidents is in the practically impossible landing of these objects. The two objects were reported to be on fire, made a loud whistling sound, and then exploded, or seemed to. Perhaps the original objects were larger than these little copper spheres. However, in the area where they had been found, there were no signs of the impact, and it looks as though the spheres landed smoothly and under control. How did the spheres negotiate a smooth landing? Certainly, they are not terrestrial space debris. More mysterious yet is the presence of a silent aircraft with 3 lights that appeared later the same evening hovering over this explosion area. What was this craft doing? Now, he says silent aircraft doesn't mean one of our aircraft. Could mean, or a helicopter or something. Implication is large UFO.
Yeah, that's where I took it.
Right. Who contracted it to be there and why? Was it an extraterrestrial craft or was it man-made? The incidents associated with Project Moondust intensifies these questions. What was the level of involvement of Moondust personnel? And what did they hope to gain or hide in Bolivia? And where, importantly, are these spheres that were recovered today?
Does he say who actually... recovered the spheres was a Bolivian...
The people in, no, U.S. Air Force personnel working on Project Moondust recovered these.
Okay, now, you know, let's plug his crash retrieval conference. He'll be back again at the Tuscany Suite Hotel in Las Vegas this time, just like it was last year, November 9th through 11th.
The Tuscanini?
Tuscanini.
Or the Tuscany.
Okay, the Tuscany. Okay, the Tuscany. You're right. I'm going to listen to a symphony.
You got one going on there, it sounds like.
Yeah, we had a fire alarm go off.
Right.
We do a red hot show.
Hey, are you sure a UFO hasn't crashed yet?
I don't know. They cut the alarm off, so I assume it's nothing. Or are they just... want this show to go up in smoke. I don't know.
I thought that was a pretty good story, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of conversation about that at this year's Crash Retrieval Conference.
There goes the alarm again. I don't know that the audience can hear that. I have my hand over the microphone, but you can hear it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of alarms, I have another alarming story here. This one was... actually received a lot of coverage in the international media. It was sort of like the Chicago UFO event over O'Hare Field, only involving a much larger craft and actually a sighting by two independent sighters, two aircraft pilots.
Now, you're talking about this English thing, right?
Right, over the English Channel.
Yeah. That is an incredible deal.
Right. Now, it got a lot of coverage, especially in England, but all over the world. I mean, there were stories here, on CNN, ABC, MSNBC. I mean, they didn't stay out there too long, but they did cover it. And the main reason is that you have two airline pilots, credible witnesses who saw the object independently. And so I have a little summary report here from the BBC that I would like to just cover with people in case some people have not heard about this. How could you not? I say, well, people don't hear about everything necessarily at the same time. And this was sent to us, a little credit here, by one of the operators of the Open Minds Forum, Mr. Brendan Burton, over in the United Kingdom. And thank you, Brendan, for passing this along. Now, here's a report from the BBC. A commercial airline pilot has reported seeing two unidentified flying objects in the sky near Guernsey. This is off the coast of England, out in the English Channel. The bright yellow flat disc shapes, estimated to be twice the size of a Boeing 737 each, were spotted on Monday 12 to 15 miles northeast of the island. Captain Ray Boyer, was about to fly an Orenge. Where do they come up with these names, especially in England? I don't know. Plane from Alderney to Southampton when he saw the objects through binoculars. Mr. Boyer said he was pretty shook up by the sighting. This is not something you see every day of the week. It was pretty scary, he said. At first he thought it was the sun reflecting from greenhouses in Guernsey. He said that the objects were bright like the sun, but did not hurt his eyes when he looked at them. The stationary objects were also observed by another aircraft and the passengers on that plane. John Spencer, deputy chairman of the British UFO Research Association, said, "These types of sightings have been reported by pilots, generally accepted to be reliable and sensible observers since the 1940s, and they have excited attention to this day. Such light effects are often popular thought to represent alien visitors, but many UFO researchers believe they likely represent natural atmospheric phenomena not yet fully understood by science." Now that's quite a statement coming from a UFO researcher, isn't it? Must be quite a conservative organization.
Well, you know, temperature inversions have been around since the 52 sightings over Washington, D.C.
Yeah, same old stories, right? Or clouds, or
something.
Ducks, or you name it. At any rate, I guess this guy wanted to appear to be unbiased, and, you know, not everything's a UFO of an E.T. on it. However, continuing to quote him, a similar encounter in 1978 over the Bass Straits of Australia, where the pilot was in radio contact with the ground throughout, resulted in the pilot never being heard from again. So these phenomena are important to study. I suspect so, if they're the phenomena seemingly is abducting people. This is the sort of sighting that is taken seriously and should be investigated thoroughly. Nick Pope, who we interviewed, who used to investigate UFOs for the Ministry of Defense, said, quote, "While no witnesses are infallible, pilots are trained observers and less likely than most people to misidentify something mundane." The MOD's UFO case files contain several reports from civil and military pilots, some of which were correlated by radar. This is a sort of sighting that is taken seriously and should be investigated thoroughly. Well, we're still waiting to see those reports, Nick. Hopefully they'll come out.
Right. Well, the Ministry of Defense promised them.
All right.
Again.
Right. So, at any rate, in summary, this is considered by the people over in England and even the people in the British UFO Society, or whatever the name was there, this is one of the most significant and intriguing sightings in recent years. And they did interview at least one of the pilots, perhaps both of them, on the BBC, or I think the interview was held on ITV.
Independent television.
Right.
Instead of the BBC, but anyway, it's a good report.
Right.
With two different people seeing it, which makes it think maybe there was something there.
I think definitely you had two UFOs bigger than 737s, which aren't that large a plane. So, I mean, you know, we're talking about something that perhaps is 100 feet across, you know, not the 30-foot variety, but more like the 100-foot variety. And two different UFOs and two different pilots on two different planes seeing them, and the passengers in one of the planes seeing. It's time for Brian's report here.
Oh, yeah, we left the audience hanging here. Can you kind of bring us up to date? You know, that's the way they used to do on those Saturday series. They would give you a little report of where we were.
Yes, well, Brian sent us this report, which actually took place in 1975, November 1975.
No, and we want to caution the audience, we have not been trying to do this since 75.
Right.
We only started last month.
That's only because this sighting, which is a U.S. sighting, it took place in Thousand Oaks, California. Was only reported to Brian and to no one else before this in January of 2007. And of course, we had the first part of this on our last show.
Yeah. You know, Thousand Oaks is an interesting place. We get several people in Thousand Oaks seeing things. I had a guy call me one night in Thousand Oaks recently, I think about a couple of months ago. I think I talked to you about it, and he said there was something on the top of his house, a little man.
Right.
He asked me what he thought. He said his dog sees it, his neighbor sees it. And so, interesting things in Thousand Oaks. Now, this is, you need to fill us in again for people who missed that last show, because this is pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, this is reported by a man who has a family, many of whom are still surviving.
Well,
this man
that talked to me has an engineering degree, and his wife is a pharmacist. So, I mean, you know.
Right.
But so what I'm saying is some unusual things are happening in Thousand Oaks, but not nearly as unusual as this.
Right. Well, this has a lot more events, and it has, interestingly enough, a lot in common. And you know, Thousand Oaks is, you know, basically in the far suburbs of Los Angeles, right? And you know, actually it was much farther out then than it is now.
Yeah, a lot of people live there now.
A lot of people live there.
When I lived in LA, there was a guy that used to commute from Thousand Oaks every day, even then in the 70s, but a lot of people do it now.
But the interesting point here is that at the time in 1975, the people involved in the story and the storyteller had recently moved into a home at the very edge of Thousand Oaks, basically on a hillside. And this was like a new development at the time.
It was out in the middle of nowhere, really.
Out in the middle of nowhere, and they lived at the end of a dead-end street, in other words.
I don't even know if it was paved. I guess it was, but...
Oh, yes, it was paved. Yeah. Yeah, this was like a housing development. So, you know, they had streets and sewers and everything, but they were at the very end of the development, which subsequently was probably expanded. But at that time, they lived at the end of nowhere. And so it sort of puts them out in the loneliness. And there's a lot of similarities between this story and some of the events that happen in other, quote, UFO hotspots around the world that are out in isolated areas. And that's not to say that UFOs and other strange phenomena only occur in isolated locations, because that simply is not true. Very strange things and very strange sightings occur right in the middle of the New York metropolitan area and any other big city. So, you know, the phenomena is worldwide. However, some of the more bizarre things appear sometimes to occur in isolated places where people feel very insecure and alone. In other words, more vulnerable. And so the reports appear interesting in that they are coming from isolated places, but I'm saying that similar events do occur in very highly populated areas, and we shouldn't be confused about that. Now, one of the places that has so much similarity to this story in that some of the things described are very similar is the story about the Skinwalker Ranch up in Utah, yeah. The northeast corner of Utah. And our friend George Knapp, of course, co-authored a book with Colm Kelmer, and we have the interview with the two of them.
Yeah, if they haven't heard that interview, they need to listen to it.
Right. It's quite exciting, but there are certainly some similarities. I just finished reading the book myself. For once, I've read a whole book on the subject rather than being distracted. And quite interesting, well put together book. The writing is excellent and very descriptive about what happened there. And in conclusion, is that there is no conclusion on what really happened there. We just don't know any more than we know about a lot of this other stuff. I'm just giving a little introductory to the fact that, you know, they lived in the middle of nowhere almost. They did have neighbors, and some of the neighbors saw some of the events that occurred. And I just wanted to emphasize that there were things seen there that were seen at the Skinwalker Ranch as well, and by scientists there. And one of the things was blue glowing orbs. And in the initial story, that's how the story starts out. A big blue, not actually that large, actually about the size of a basketball, crashed into a field across from the house. And that was what started all the strange events that occurred subsequently. And the blue spheres reappeared at several times, and they actually harassed the dogs. And if you read the Skinwalker story, you'll find the same story about blue orbs and dogs, and two dogs at the Gorman Ranch ended up being incinerated by this one of these blue orbs. Luckily, that did not happen in Thousand Oaks, but there were strange beings that were seen wandering around the house and out in the brush behind the house. Loud screams were heard. The dogs were freaked out. The people were freaked out. UFOs were seen hovering over the house by the neighbors, and certainly observed by the people themselves. And I believe that the story is that the man's wife felt that she had been abducted and a probe put in her stomach because she was pregnant at the time. And that's an important part of the story. So that sort of sets it up of what, you know, there were wild and woolly things that happened. And the end of the story is basically what is described by the reporter here, the person that experienced it, as the aftermath. And that's what we're going to cover tonight.
Okay, now here he is, Larry Dickin with the aftermath.
Right. Now, we talked to my cousin next door, who just happened to be one of the neighbors next door, and they heard nothing of all of these wild things that were going on. I have no explanation, because they should have. The thing was loud. Now, I think they're referring here to the screams that were heard
up on the hillside, right?
Right, and actually behind the house as well. And this, remember, this sighting, or not sighting, but report of events occurred over a two-day period. And then apparently nothing happened after that, just like nothing happened before. So the neighbors should have heard the screams, but apparently they did not. Although they did report seeing a UFO hovering over the house. The male German Shepherd dog went fast. In other words, it passed away. Now remember the two dogs, there were two dogs involved here. And they were like apparently chasing and being frightened by this blue sphere. And also the dogs, you know, apparently heard the screams, whatever they were too. So at any rate, the male German Shepherd went fast.
He died very quickly after that.
After the 75 sighting, yeah. He was 5 years old.
Which is young.
And in the week. Right, and in the weeks following the incident, he lost control of his nervous system to the point that he couldn't function, and so we had to put him to sleep. Now, in other words, I suspect he was exhibiting signs that were similar to epilepsy, probably having fits. The vet said he had no idea what was wrong with him. The female subsequently went blind. She was 7 years old. Over the next few months, and then ultimately she was put to sleep as well. So whatever this object, this blue sphere, and this little thing that's really what I would call not, this wasn't a UFO, it was like a probe. It was like an unmanned device that was sent out to investigate things, but also had the potential to do harm. And that's the same thing that happened on the Gorman Ranch with the dogs.
Right, it incinerated them there, literally in front of the fellow.
Right.
But, so I guess really those two dogs were luckier than these two dogs. These dogs suffered.
Yes, for several months. Now, goes on to say, my dad seemed to age rapidly for the next year and a half. And then he died of a heart attack at a company picnic in August 1977.
Wow.
Not quite 2 years after the event. My daughter, now remember, the mother felt that she had been abducted and probed with a, you know, abdominal probe.
Right.
And she was pregnant at the time of this event. My daughter was born normally, but has had a few strange incidents, and I watched her lose her baby teeth, then get her adult teeth, only to lose them at age 12, and then get a third set of teeth. The dentist said it wasn't happening, but I know that it did. In other words, the dentist says, you know, this is impossible. You can't have your baby teeth come out, and then your adult teeth come out, and then a third set come in. Says that just couldn't be, and he says he observed it to happen. A few months after the encounter, I went and laid down after work and spiked 106 temperature, which can be enough to kill somebody if you don't like get an ice tub real quick. I was sick for a year, was put in the hospital and tested for hepatitis and cancer, but they had no idea what was wrong with me. The only thing they told me was my blood work showed some irregularity, and I was told not to give blood. In other words, they didn't really explain to him what was wrong, although there probably were signs in his blood that there was something wrong. They thought that he had some kind of an infectious disease. The lady that worked with my mom quit unexpectedly the next day after the event, and I never had a chance to ask her about it, as she committed suicide shortly thereafter. Not a good tale, is it? That's it, if that isn't enough.
Start to say, what else do you want? My God.
I mean, this guy who's reporting this story after all of these years, some 30 years, is still suffering from the side effects of whatever he encountered. He's still sick. Now, he says the scream and the fireballs were strange, but the fact that we all went to bed and didn't seem to care that our 10 minutes in the bathroom turned into 4 hours was maybe the strangest. In other words, they were all apparently abducted. I have no explanation for any of it. This was hard to write about. I had to stop once, and thinking about it, it still causes me goosebumps. A couple of days after the event, my dad, brother, and I went out on our front yard talking about this encounter when my dad told us the following story. He joined the Air Force in 1950 after 2 years at the University of Minnesota and spent some time in Korea as a jet mechanic, and then came stateside and was stationed in Sioux City, Iowa, where he was training as a radar technician. One night in 1954, the whole base went on alert suddenly, and he was told that there was an unknown object coming from the north. They got a radar reading, and it was about 50,000 to 80,000 feet in altitude and in traveling at a speed in excess of 1,200 miles per hour. I recall him saying 1,800 miles per hour, but my brother said 1,200, so we'll go with that. It went off the screen to the south, and everybody in the room was told to forget that it even happened. He never told us about that before, but my mom confirmed today that he told her about it the next day after it happened. He was on the overnight shift. And that's the end of our strange tale from Thousand Oaks.
You're right, it's very similar to the Skinwalker thing, except this has human consequences.
Far exceeding those experienced on the Gorman Ranch, either by the Gormans or by the NIDS team investigating subsequently. There were certainly no fatalities, not even essentially a scratch suffered by anybody that was human, although they were scared to death.
Yeah, they had a lot of horrible, terrifying moments, but no physical harm. But here this thing created havoc with an entire family.
Yes, indeed. And interestingly enough, blue balls, you know, small probe-like devices involved in both events.
Well, I wish we had more answers. We have about 10 minutes left of the show.
And we have some filers reports of interest.
Let's get to it.
Current stuff.
Are we not going to do a Rick Trotman deal this week?
I think we're going to skip that this week only in the sense of perhaps we've neglected George's reports here.
Yeah, so, I understand. I hope Rick understands.
Oh, he will. Okay. if you want to read Rick's excellent reports, certainly you'll find a lot of them in each month's UFO magazine. Rick contributes an article there each month. The same kind of reports we do on our show.
That's right. And we have Windplug UFO Magazine. You have an interesting article coming up in the June issue. And I have something about Roswell for July.
Right. So something to look forward. We have a report here from Alabama, Northport, Alabama. The witness stated that she was walking her dog and noticed a light aircraft flying overhead, followed by a silver orb, another sphere. Yeah, these do come in various colors, incidentally. White, blue, a lot of orange ones, interestingly. And all, fairly small in size, indicating that they are probably unmanned probes.
Usually the size of basketballs are smaller.
Sometimes baseballs, yeah.
My impression is that the white ones are probably not too much to worry about. The orange ones like to chase you, and the blue ones stay away from
them. Right. You see a blue orb, go the other way. Especially if you have a dog. They don't like dogs. I wonder why.
Well, it's a cat people.
Yeah, man's best friend, but not E.T.'s best friend, at least some of them, apparently. So at any rate, the witness said that her dog at once became excited, and other dogs in the neighborhood also became loud and barked. The aircraft, or let's just say the craft, not aircraft necessarily, was flying north. Oh, it was the aircraft, because there's a small light plane involved here. And the aircraft was flying north, and the orb was below it and to the rear. The orb then reversed direction and began flying south while the aircraft continued on its northward journey. The orb then abruptly disappeared. The witness said that she sighted similar orbs in the area in the past. Investigators' notes on this one. The witness seemed quite sincere and accurately described her experience. It is also interesting to note that her dog became excited by the experience. The other dogs in the neighborhood may have responded to the witness's dog's excitability and could have also been affected by the sighting. Given the description provided by the witness, the object was not a balloon and appeared to be under intelligent control. Conclusion unidentified.
Anybody out there have any experience with ETs and dogs, write us. We'd like to know about it. Because
yes.
You brought up an interesting topic there. I've never heard...
Well, dogs do hear things that we don't.
We've had reports of dogs stopping and looking up or being frightened.
Right.
Before the human realizes that there's something around.
Right.
But I've never heard of an ET petting a dog.
No, I haven't either.
They don't seem to...
No reports of that.
They don't seem to be friendly.
Right. Pet a few humans sometimes.
They don't seem to be friendly to animals.
Right, in general. They do seem to like to mutilate a few of them.
Well, your cows especially.
Right. Here's our next report. Comes from California, interestingly enough, from Garden Grove, which is part of the L.A. complex.
Right, a different direction than Thousand Oaks, but...
Right. Well, right in the middle of Orange County. Couldn't be more crowded. So, just the opposite of the initial Thousand Oaks sighting, yeah. My 11-year-old daughter was in her room, laying in bed, not asleep yet, and at 10:15 p.m. she ran out of her room, very scared and confused. She said, "I felt electricity and heard a strong energy vibration in my room and looked out to see a flying object spinning green and white in color." She said that the thing was flying south until she lost sight of it. She came to me, I'm her mom, in the state of confusion and in shock, looking pale and unable to talk until she calmed down. She was then able to tell and describe what she saw. This is her first UFO sighting. I believe she was probably able to sense the energy flying over our home. Well, apparently so. And then another report from San Jose, again in the L.A. area.
No. San Jose?
San Francisco area. This occurred on April the 2nd.
I mean, there's lots of sands in California, so, but you're right. Going, what happened in San Jose? Do you know the weather?
All right, so this is, you know, a week ago.
Right.
Nice, recent sighting. I noticed a cigar-shaped aircraft hovering in the northeast sky at about 11 p.m. while watching for a reported meteor shower. At first, it was extremely bright, with four white lights that changed from a stationary position to a sweeping effect, in other words, moving around the craft. The saucer or cigar shape, in other words, couldn't really tell, is this really a saucer or is this a cigar? You know, it's like seen head on and you really can't differentiate. But it was hovering, and a commercial aircraft seemed to be heading for it. The unidentified aircraft flashed its light at the commercial aircraft, and the commercial aircraft veered away to a different location. I got out my binoculars and looked closer at the unknown light in the sky and realized it was not something normal. It appeared to be a cigar or saucer shape with four very bright lights across it. Occasionally, the lights would dim to the point of being not visible to the naked eye. The lights on the craft would change shape and become shaped like a black slash, which grew more and more narrow over a period of several seconds. Then the lights would open fully again and become very bright. I watched this object for about 2.5 hours. I mean, it's just sitting there essentially in one place for 2.5 hours. That's quite unusual in itself. During this time, no airplanes whatsoever flew over me, which is quite unusual because this is normally a regularly busy flight path for San Francisco. The craft simply hovered there in place. There is no way that it could have been an airplane or a helicopter. I called my brother, who lived several miles closer to the spot where the craft was hovering. He went outside and immediately spotted it and said, "I think we are in trouble." He too observed the lights on it changing, but described them as a sweeping-like movement. I noticed my cell phone reception was very poor during this time. A lot of background noise, static, bleed-over noise, etc. I made a point of observing for a long time so that I would be certain that this was not a product of my imagination or blurred vision or misinterpretation. And certainly 2.5 hours is a long enough time.
Well, I wish we had more manpower. We'd file a Freedom of Information Act with the FAA there in San Francisco for that time. Might be surprised. Somebody had to.
Yeah,
somebody had to give an order for planes not to fly around here.
Yeah, well, he's saying that, you know, this is like where I live here, is the flight path is within a mile or two of where you live, and you're used to seeing planes crossing over all the time.
Somebody
put a stop. And for an obvious reason, here's this big object, and initially, a commercial plane almost ran into it.
We may have more of a story here than anybody anticipates. Remember, the Chicago thing took several months to percolate.
Yeah, we just might find this on the regular mainstream news at some point, mightn't we?
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. At least we did get to some filers' reports.
Yes, we did.
We do urge people to report sightings to us. We got a couple this week that we'll try to cover next week. We love to get personal reports. We got a form there you can fill out.
Indeed we do.
And Larry, I've enjoyed it, so watch out for those flying saucers.
Okay, Jerry. You keep your eyes to the skies.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm a spaceman, and I just got in from space, a spaceman. I'm looking for the human race, a spaceman. I heard a whisper, it was here, I'm a spaceman.